The opinions expressed during this program are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, management, staff, or advertisers of WMGQ Magic 98.3.
How's the water? Not so good in the New Jersey, New York harbor area. More than 165 million plastic particles are estimated to be floating in our waters, according to a New York, New Jersey Baykeeper study. And joining me is Sandra Miola. She's from the New York, New Jersey Baykeeper. Sandra, thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I see this, that you've just put out a report about how much plastic you have found in the New York, New Jersey waterway, our waterway, so that right by us, Perth Amboy, the Arthur Kill, Lower Newark Bay, the waters between New York and New Jersey. It's pretty startling what you found, 165 million plastic particles?
Million, yes.
Okay, is that a shocking figure, or is that a shocking figure, or am I just not aware of how bad it really sounds?
Yeah, it definitely is a shocking figure to say 165 million plastic pieces are floating in our waterways. Yeah, we definitely have a huge problem on our hands.
Now, what led to this study? I mean, you're there, you see the water all the time. Is this the first time you've done this, or is this an ongoing thing with this plastic study to see what... You know, what is the situation? What is the health of the waters?
This was the first time we completed a study like this, and it's the first study of its kind in our region. Other studies are being done in other areas like the Great Lakes, but this is exciting because it's the first look at the area, the most densely populated area in the country, really.
Now, when you did this study, is this the results that you expected? You know, what were you thinking going into this, the Baykeeper? Did you think, you know, it doesn't look good, but, you know, how did this shake out with what your feelings were going into it?
Yeah, going into it, I didn't expect to find so much foam. And by foam, I mean the styrofoam, the single-use paper, single-use cups and take-out boxes made of styrofoam. So the foam was the most present type of plastic in our samples at 38%, which is huge.
That is huge. Now, I thought those plastics had been outlawed.
No, not the styrofoam, no.
So,
There's just an ordinance in Rahway that bans the food service industry from using the foam, but no statewide legislation. We're working on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, it really doesn't break down.
No, it doesn't. It's styrofoam itself and plastic in general is it's non-biodegradable, so it never truly goes away. It just breaks into tiny, tiny little pieces. But yeah, it never truly goes away. It's mistaken by fish for food, and it can move up the food chain. Whole sorts of nasty other issues that come along with plastic pollution.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that, because when we say to people, okay, so you did a study and there's a lot of plastic in the waterways between New York and New Jersey and we should be concerned about it. But why should we be concerned? I mean, what does this mean for our health? As you just alluded to, it really does go up the food chain directly back to us.
Yeah, exactly. It's moving plastic. We can be easily polluting one of our major food sources on Earth. There's been plastic documented in every single waterway on Earth. And, you know, if plastics are in the water, so are all the creatures, and the creatures can eat the plastic. And, yeah, it moves up the food chain. So we could be ingesting plastic so tiny that we can't even see and we don't even know about.
Now, tell me, too, about the microbeads that I've been reading about that are in makeup. Maybe sometimes they're in your toothpaste. How is that affecting this? And can you even measure that? Do you even see that? Or how do you know about microbeads and what it's doing to the waters?
Sure. So we did find those plastic microbeads in our samples. Plastic microbeads are usually found in toothpaste and exfoliating scrubs. They are too tiny to be filtered by wastewater treatment plants, and so when they're rinsed off and they go down the drain, they end up directly into our waterway. And although microbeads are now phased out, President Obama signed a piece of legislation that would ban the manufacturing and sale of those products in a few years. But microbeads are just one type of plastic that's contributing to this larger pollution problem.
And the rest is, you were saying, the foam containers. What were some of the other things that you found were really polluting the waterways that you found a lot of?
We found a lot of tiny little fragments, unidentifiable fragments. They're hard pieces of plastic. And we also found round little pellets.
And what were they, Sandra? Do you know?
They're called nurdles. They're pre-production plastics. They are actually the building block of plastics. Those pellets are melted down and liquefied to make other plastic items in all shapes and sizes.
So why would they be in the waters?
So they could be, unfortunately, make their way into the water during transport. Other plastics can, if they're on the street, if someone litters, they're on the street, and then rainfall happens, it's those plastics are washed down the storm drain and can end up in the waterway. And, you know, another reason plastic ends up in our water is due to improper waste management. Again, the transport can be an issue, or even in a localized manner, just keeping lids on garbage cans is huge.
Really? Mm-hmm. So how do we, as the public, if people, you know, start reading the study that you do and you start explaining to them why this is so important, what kind of things should we be looking out for? What kind of things should we be doing or changing in our daily lives to try and do our part to help? Or is there anything we can do?
Yeah, there's a lot we can all do. Just simply stopping the use of those single-use products, the things that we use for a few minutes and then throw away, just for folks to stop using that will make a huge difference. When we do beach cleanups or stream cleanups, the number one type of trash we find is always the single-use plastics, the bottles, bags, utensils, straws, takeout containers, coffee cups, and the list goes on. So, yeah, if everyone just did their part and just brought their own and you know, we would see a lot. We would see a reduction in that type of pollution and in our waterways as well.
Now, would it help, because we're such a throwaway society and people eat out so much and you know, it's very hard to turn that boat around, but we have to. Is there another way that you all look at to think going back to maybe paper or are there ways that can facilitate this quicker?
Yeah, so the other way, you're right, the other way is a policy approach. So, for example, while the personal care product industry didn't phase out microbeads on their own, President Obama had to step in and sign that piece of legislation. So styrofoam, for example, styrofoam can be replaced by the food service industry by compostable paper. Very easy fix. It's only a few cents more. And that's an easy fix. In terms of plastic
bags. And isn't
bags,
that how it started out in the beginning?
Exactly, yeah.
I'm remembering some great fish and chips wrapped in newspaper, but that's probably not healthy now either. But
Yeah. And the other tidbit about styrofoam that I should mention is that styrofoam or any type of polyfoam contains styrene, which is likely a carcinogen. So if you're putting hot food on this styrofoam or drinking from a coffee cup that's made of this foam material, that foam is somewhat breaking down a little bit and releasing that harmful toxin, the styrene, and we're likely ingesting those types of toxins.
So that's a double reason, actually, to pay more attention. And anyone who's ever burned a piece of styrofoam by mistake, putting takeout food too close to the stove, I think they know what you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so this issue isn't just an environmental issue. It's a public health issue.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about... Oh, before we leave this, I want to ask you, you're doing the study again soon, or how are you going to compare what you found? When was this one done? Last month? 2 months ago?
We started sampling March 2015, and we ended the sampling in August.
Right.
So from August until about now, we've just been analyzing samples and processing them and counting what we found. And we're going to plan on doing the same thing starting hopefully later this month, early April, getting back on the boat, sampling the same sites, maybe adding a few more sites, and we'll see. We'll hopefully get more definitive results and try to make the numbers a little clearer for folks.
Right, and then continue to make these comparisons to see what shape we're really in. Now, I have to ask you a little bit about the nitty-gritty. I see you said you have to go back in the boat. How do you do this? And how many people help, or you know, what goes on to actually get this stuff out of the water?
Sure. So there's about four people on our boat. We have a 30-foot boat, and we use a mantitrol net. It's designed to float on the surface, and it's dragged on the side of the boat for about a half hour per sample.
And wait, does that look like the fish, the manta?
Yeah, it looks like a manta ray, yeah. And it's designed to collect anything that's floating on the water surface, and everything's collected at the end of the net. And then from there, we just rinse it off, and we put it in our mason jar, and we bring it to the lab at Rutgers that we use. And from there, we count the samples. We categorize them into size and type. And then the way we got that huge number, the 165 million plastic particles, is that we extrapolated what we counted based on the surface area of the water sampled.
Right. Okay. And then that's the way you'll do it for the next two to compare. So
yes.
I have to ask the four of you, as you're out on the boat and trawling for this plastic, what was there anything that you found that you didn't expect to see at all, either plastic-wise or not, while you were out there?
We found all sorts of strange things. We found balloons and floss picks. Nothing too surprising, nothing too wonky.
Right, because you wonder sometimes when you go out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when you're out there, and since, you know, you are the New York, New Jersey Bay Keeper, What does the water look like now to you? What is the feeling that you're getting when you're out there? Are you seeing any improvements in the past few years, or we've got a long way to go?
From what I've heard from other colleagues and what I've seen myself, the waters have definitely been improving over time.
Right.
But we still do have a lot of work to do. And just an example, you know, there are so many living things in our harbor. Just this past summer, one of our colleagues saw a humpback whale. There are seals out here.
Beautiful.
You know, so there's
you're giving
a lot
us
of,
hope
a lot
seeing
of
those things. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's
absolutely
a lot of life in these waters, and you know, we need to protect it by stopping this harmful stuff from getting in the water.
Right. Well, you know, I was reading through your website and seeing, you know, some of the programs that you're involved with that we're going to discuss a little bit now, and one of them, being the Raritan Riverkeeper, who's part of all of this or working along with you, and to read the stats that said the Raritan is still the 14th most polluted waterway in the nation?
Yes.
That's not a good stat.
No.
So what
There's
is
a
that?
Lot of industry along the Raritan.
Yeah, and still, so we're still trying to get help with federal Superfund sites. I don't know if you have could give us a little bird's eye view of how much still has to be done there. I know that's probably a show or two by itself, but
yeah, I'm not an expert on the Raritan,
right?
But I could tell you, Newark, the Passaic River is a Superfund site.
The whole river,
yeah. The lower 8 miles, especially, is highly contaminated with dioxin.
Wow.
Agent Orange from the Vietnam War that was dumped, and all sorts of other nasty things that, you know, unfortunately, when you walk along that river, there's signs posted that advise folks not to eat the crabs or fish that are taken from those waters.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's a quality of life issue along those kind of communities.
Well, that's very serious. I mean, that's still very serious pollution.
Yes.
Now, funding-wise, just overall, like for your work, for the work with all these groups trying to do something about the polluted waters in the state, how is it going that way for the Bay Keeper and for other folks? Are you finding funding? How is it going, you know, that way?
So we do receive some foundation grants and personal donations. So, yeah.
So you do, but I'm sure you're still always looking for
donations. Oh, yeah, yeah. We're always applying for different grants. And if anyone wants to donate, they can visit nynjbaykeeper.org.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to this might be a good time, actually, since you brought that up, Sandra, to talk about, because this I am fascinated and love. For people who, I'm always looking for things for people to do, in addition to be active and know more about their communities. But can you tell me a little bit about this kayaking adventures that you have through the kayaking tours for folks?
Yeah.
Because I think it would make as you say in your website, perfect Valentine's gifts. But, you know, you have your Valentine all year round. But I love that you do this. So if you could tell us a little bit about it. And the other thing, the 100th anniversary of the shark attack in Matawan Creek. So,
oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, a couple of books that I've read and interviewed authors about that, which is unbelievable what happened here. But anyway, tell folks about the kayak tours that are coming up.
Sure. So starting in June, we'll have free kayak tours in Keyport, New Jersey. They're about an hour long. Actually, they're a half hour long. We divide folks up into two groups. And yeah, it's great for beginners. It's great for folks to learn about their waterways. A lot of the people that come out with us never have been kayaking before, so it's nice to share that with them, and a lot of them don't know that they could kayak there whenever they want, that their water, that water is theirs. It's their backyard, pretty much.
Well, and it's nice of you to share with the public that a lot of people are new, so, you know, when you have that tough time getting in a kayak, you won't be alone. Let me just throw that in.
Yeah, definitely. And then we also have guided tours. We have them this year in Matawan Creek, which is the site of the, you're right, the 100th year shark attack.
Which, whether or not the author said, was definitely the basis for Jaws. I'm just going to throw
that
in. Yes, exactly. And then you have some stuff in Woodbridge, too, right? Do you?
Woodbridge, yeah. Woodbridge Creek and also the Navasink River, which is very beautiful. And there, you know, there beginners can handle all of our trips. You know, we supply the kayak, the PFD, the lifesaver, and the paddle, and we have a great guided instructor that will tell participants all about the waterway. It's just a really great summer activity to do, and all of those trips, the guided ones, are 2 hours long.
That's great.
A nice chunk of time, yeah.
Right. Well, and it is really a good way to get in, to know the waterway, to get people interested in it, and to get folks learning how to kayak a little bit, which is
a
win-win for everyone. Let me just tell folks, you are listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn. I'm interviewing Sandra Miola, the New York, New Jersey baykeeper, and we're talking about the kayak tours now, which, if you could give folks, how can they find out more about it?
Sure, you can visit our website. It's nynjbaykeeper.org, and you can type in the search box kayak.
Okay, and you know, as you were just saying, it's a great way for folks to learn about the waterways and what they have access to. But I do want to see if you can comment on, or if folks can find out more information. I was surprised to read on your website that a lot of the access to the waterway that was part of the coastal construction that was going on, is that changing in New Jersey?
So we've, you know, a lot of developers always like to build right on the coast, but the thing that we're concerned about is sea level rise and whether or not it's a good decision to do that or not.
Right.
So yeah, we've kind of taken that stance.
Right. And I remember years ago when a lot of development was going on, I guess main what comes to mind is Jersey City, when they were building a lot of the construction down there. And they were saying they wanted to keep, you know, access to the waterway for the public. Is that still part of the mission in New Jersey, do you know, to keep that open for the public?
I don't know. I mean, I think so.
Right.
It's an important issue. I'm not an expert on that, though.
No, but that is just something that, you know, as we look forward, because even with all of the issues with flooding and things of that nature, I think having access to the waterway is probably still an important, you know, factor for
definitely.
For folks in New Jersey. And talk to me about, I don't know if you have any information on Liberty State Park and what's going on in Liberty State Park.
I do.
And the is it an attempt to make it private?
Yes.
So what is that about, Sandra? What is happening?
Yeah, so the Christie administration under the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection released a report a couple weeks ago that details basically a wish list for Liberty State Park. For folks who don't know, Liberty State Park is a free and green park right behind Lady Liberty and Ellis Island with amazing views of the city, and it's a park, you know,
it's a spectacular place to walk, sit, run, just enjoy.
Right. And, you know, it should remain that way as free, green, open space. Unfortunately, the Christie administration views the park as real estate and a profit to be made. So they are proposing various development projects like a hotel, a private marina, an amphitheater, and all sorts of other things. It's really terrible, but we're fighting right back. New Jersey has tried to make these kind of development proposals in the past, and they've always
been struck down. Yes, Sandy Hook, actually. Sandy Hook comes to mind, the officers' area and those officers' homes many years ago, and I don't think anything's gone forward with that yet, not since the last time I've been there.
So right now we're kind of we're collecting signatures on a petition that would hopefully save Liberty State Park. People can go to SaveLSP.org to sign the petition.
And will they be able to find out more information for folks who, you know, this is a surprise to them that, because I think it was very, I know it was quite a while ago, but I think it was a pretty hard, you know, hard fight to get Liberty State Park to be the way it is, especially with the real estate across from New York and waterfront.
Exactly. Yeah, and in such a densely populated area, an urban area, it's so important to keep this piece of tiny little green space preserved.
Well, and tell me, has Liberty State Park? Because I haven't followed that closely. I do remember the battles early on, but has it been a success for the urban area that it is? Has it been a successful park for New Jersey?
Yeah, there are millions of visitors each year. It's jam packed on warm weekends. Year round, it really is utilized greatly.
Yes, and if they'd only open that bridge to the Statue of Liberty that they use for construction, that would just be a slam dunk for that park. Yeah. I never understood, to tell you the truth, Sandra, why that beautiful bridge is right there and we can't use it. But that's a whole nother story. But anyway, listen, I am so happy that you could be part of At Central Jersey and come on and tell us about this study, and we will follow up with you. To see what you find ongoing. But before you leave, just tell me a little bit about the Baykeeper and how many folks work there and what else you do, because you do a lot.
Yeah. So Baykeeper's a nonprofit environmental organization focusing on clean water issues throughout the New York, New Jersey Harbor estuary. Our bandwidth of area is as far north as the Tappan Zee Bridge on the Hudson and as far south as Sandy Hook Bay. And some other things we do, in addition to the plastic research and the Liberty State Park campaign, is we also have a wonderful oyster restoration program.
Oh, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So right now, oyster habitat in our region is not really existent. Oysters are functionally extinct.
And it was, can I interrupt once? It was a huge industry at one time, and I mean, a long, long time ago, right? I mean, it was a very important industry to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early 1900s, it was, until people started eating them a lot and over-harvesting, and then coupled with all of the pollution that was, you know, during the Industrial Revolution, the oyster population declined in our harbor. So we, through this program, we seek to research them and figure out what kind of habitat they like the best.
And now where is that going? Like, where are you seeding certain areas with oyster now? Oysters?
So right now we have our reef at Naval Weapons Station Earl.
Right.
So it's heavily guarded by the military, by the Navy, sorry. And yeah, so we have an aquaculture facility there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what are you finding? I mean, are the waters clean enough to restart an oyster industry, do you think?
Yeah, so oysters thrive in these waters. They grow very quickly. They live. And what's so great about oysters is that they not only have the capacity to filter so much water, but they also are animals that can protect our coasts from things like shoreline erosion and storm surge.
Wow.
Because when they grow, when they're building up their reef, they're sticking together and they almost form a kind of wall, a barrier.
So it could be a natural protection that is something mm-hmm. we desperately need at this point.
Yes, cheap natural protection. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so how do you get it along? How do you get things moving more here, Sandra? It sounds like something we really, really need.
Yes. So in New Jersey, it's tough because the DEP currently bans shellfish research and restoration programs, but we're lucky enough to be at the Naval Weapons Station. But we hope that, you know, in the upcoming years, the DEP will work with us and hopefully allow this kind of research in public waters where we can have volunteers work with us and reinstate our gardening program that we used to have a few years ago before the ban.
Now, why did they ban it?
So the ban was instituted in 2010 because they feared that folks would poach the animals and sell them to people and make them sick. However, the real reason is that DEP wasn't doing their job. They weren't patrolling the waters as they should have been under the FDA's requirements.
Okay, so that's why
we were forced.
Yeah, okay. That's why you wound up at Earl.
Yes. So So after the ban in 2011, we went to Earl. It's unfortunate because it's DEP's job to make sure these waters are clean, and we have this resource that can make these waters cleaner, but we're not allowed to use them. So hopefully next year we'll be back and
be moving forward. So you're still working on it, trying to get some changes made.
Yeah. So Governor Christie actually did sign a bill last month that requires DEP to improve their shellfish rules by next September.
And what will that mean then? What will that mean for you?
Yeah, so written in the bill, actually, is that they need to institute a public engagement process with public hearings, and they also need to work with organizations that do this type of work, meaning they need to work with Baykeeper. So we're looking forward to that and working with them to get these animals back in the water and making our coast stronger.
Now, I'm sensing that maybe some folks listening to this think, oh, this is something I would love to get involved with. Mm-hmm. Are volunteers part of your organization, and are you looking for additional, or what's your story with the volunteers?
We're always looking for volunteers for our cleanups. Our cleanups are posted on our website, and also while we can't really bring volunteers out to Earl right now because of the security restrictions, we do have a scientific and citizen science reef in the Bronx. If anyone wants to take a ride up there with us, we always welcome volunteers we measure the oysters there and we keep track of, we document what sort of other fish and crabs are nearby to document the biodiversity. So it's a fun couple hours that volunteers have with us. So if anyone's interested, you can visit our website. It's nynjbaykeeper.org.
And I have a feeling when people get involved, they stick around for a long time.
Oh, definitely.
And one more thing before you go, conservation, very involved in conservation. And what have you seen? What have you guys done over the past few years? You've really managed to get a lot of places and areas, you know, under that bailiwick and being conserved in New Jersey.
One of our major victories that was just last year, actually, was we were successful in helping acquire a new Monmouth County park, and it's going to be a 250-acre park in Aberdeen, so people can look out for that.
And Dismal Swamp, too, I think. You've done a lot of work with them, too, haven't you?
Yeah, that was a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so you're making a huge difference, and we will interview you again. Hopefully, in the next few years, we'll be hearing much better news about these plastics, Sandra.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I'm so glad you could be part of the show. Sandra Miola from the New York, New Jersey Baykeeper. Thank you so much for being part of that Central Jersey.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.